y'all. Welcome back to the On the Journey podcast. My name is Grace Lord, and I'm so excited to be here with you today as we talk about school. School is stressful and overwhelming and very hard sometimes. And if you're not in school, that's okay. We're also going to be talking about work in general. If you're listening to this, I really do believe that God has this message here for you right now, because school and work is something that we all do, and it can be very burdensome and hard, but that's not the way it has to be, and the Bible has a whole lot to say about this. So let's dive in. Alright guys, I don't know about you, but sometimes school is just a lot. It is stressful and overwhelming, and it can cause a lot of anxiety for people. School is something that can... it's meant for us to learn and enjoy, and it has all of these like really great attributes to it. But in reality, when most of us talk about school, it's usually kind of negative. It's a wanting to get out of it or figure out how we can do the least amount of work possible. It's talking about skipping classes, or I just want to sleep in, or I'm just so stressed out about my upcoming exam, or I just have so much work, I can't do all the other things that I want to do. And that is a real struggle, and it is one that I have as well. I cannot tell you guys how many times I have sat down and looked at the massive amounts of homework I have to do and been like, how am I going to get this all done and still have a social life and still be able to lead the girls I'm leading and still get to do sports and fun things and all the other things in life that we want to do? Work can be a lot. I usually find that everybody I talk to has this same kind of pessimistic outlook on work and school, which is really interesting because that's so contrary to what the Bible has to say. In Colossians 3:23, it says, "Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you are working for the Lord rather than for people." And I don't think this is how we think about school. I think when we think about school, we're doing it for maybe our parents. Maybe we're doing it for our professors to get the grades, to get into the colleges we want or the grad programs that we want, or because we want the job that we want. Or if it's work, we're working not for the Lord, but for our boss. We're working to get the promotion, to get the next step, to get into the next job that we want to have that's even better. We're working just to make money, to put food on the table, or to pay the bills. And these aren't bad reasons to be working. These are really good reasons to be working. But Colossians here is pointing out that in whatever we're doing, we're supposed to be doing it for the Lord rather than for people. And this isn't usually how we approach things, which is really interesting. And something that my dad told me when I was young was that there's two parts to any class that you're taking. You have to master the content, and you have to get the grade. That means that we need to learn the material, like actually learn it, like not just regurgitate it onto a test, because that's going to be so not beneficial to us 10 years down the road. We actually have to learn it, let it become ingrained into part of who we are and part of our mental schema. And the other thing we have to do is get the grade. And sometimes that means you're jumping through hoops and you're playing the game to get the grade with your teacher, figuring out what it is they like. If your teacher is really into, like, I don't know, medieval time stuff, throw a little bit of medieval time stuff into your essay and they'll be delighted by it. Whatever it is that you need to do to play the game to get the grade. You can't just master the material and not get the grade, and you can't just get the grade and not master the material, because those just aren't going to be fulfilling. A very common misconception that I've come across so many times in different conversations with people and also in various books that I've read is this idea that work is part of the fall. And I would just love to clarify for us for a second, work is not part of the fall. We're actually created for work. In the beginning, in Genesis, God creates everything, right? He goes through the work of making the entire world, which is a lot of work. It's 6 whole days of work, or the actual literal translation of that Hebrew word is time periods. There are 6 whole time periods of work that God goes through to create the world. And then on the 7th day, he obviously rests. But we're going to focus on the work right now. We'll get into the rest later. So he's working, and that is good. And he keeps saying, after he creates everything, and it is good. And after he creates man, he gives man a task. And we are tasked with taking care of the garden. And as John Mark Comer points out in, quite frankly, I don't remember which book. I don't remember if it's The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry or if it's Loveology or what it is. But we were made for work. This isn't just like your little backyard garden. Like, this is an entire country essentially. Like, this is a massive piece of land that we are, like, the humans are deemed to go and work, to make it fruitful, to take care of it, to tend to this garden. Guys, I am not a gardener. I really like plants. I love plants. I frequently enough, probably like once a month, end up buying a new plant. They're small plants. They're usually succulents or just some like hanging plant or a little potted plant to go in my room or on my front porch or somewhere in my house with all of my housemates and everything. But I kill these plants. Like, every single time I kill them, I cannot keep a succulent alive, which, you know, that's kind of bad. I don't have a green thumb. My mom and my grandma, they have green thumbs. I don't. Keeping a succulent alive should not be that hard, right? They live in the desert. They just need a little bit of water every now and then and some sunlight. But I somehow managed to kill them. So they last me about like 2 or 3 months and then they die and then I get a new one. It's a bad cycle. If I was charged with running the Garden of Eden, it would be a very bad thing. I would put in the work probably, but it just wouldn't work out. They would die. But all of that to say, like, if you actually have like a really nice garden, it takes so much effort. You have to dig up the soil. You have to weed out the weeds constantly. There's all of these things that we have to do to take care of the garden, the watering, the cultivating. It's a difficult task. And that's what we were called to do as like a human creation. Adam and Eve were sent out to do this before the fall. Sin had not yet entered the world. This was part of God's beautiful creation, was that we would have a task, that we would have work. Because work is good. Work is good and life-giving and God-ordained. It's something that can actually bring a lot of joy. But before we jump into the joy, let's talk about what it is that we're working. Because we're not working in gardens. We might be in school. We might be right out of school doing whatever job field it is that we want to do. Maybe we're an intern. Maybe we have the dream job that we want. Whatever it is, we're all working in some way. And in any field that you're in, I just want you to know, like, you can be advancing the kingdom of God in your field. You can do ministry wherever you are, and it doesn't have to be actual ministry. And that being said, like, if you're in actual ministry, that's amazing, and that's phenomenal. Like, we need people in actual ministry. But we also need Christians in every job field. We need doctors and lawyers and nurses and accountants and teachers and preachers and garbage men and grocery workers and computer designers and graphic designers and professors and architects and athletes. We need all of these things. Whatever job it is, we need Christians there. Your ministry can be wherever you are. It doesn't have to be being a pastor or a youth pastor or a worship leader. Those are all really great things. And if you're one of those, we love you and appreciate you so much. But I want you to know that if you're a Christian, you don't have to be in a ministry job field. We actually need Christians in every job field, because every job field needs to experience the love of Christ and the kingdom come right there where it is. God has actually gifted each person something different and has a different calling for everyone. In Romans 12, verses 6 to 8, it says, "In his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you're a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you a leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly." So essentially what this is getting into is, like, God has given each of us different things about us that we're really good at. Maybe you're really good at music. Maybe you're really good at sports. Maybe you have an eye for design. Maybe you're super artistic. Maybe you're not artistic at all. Maybe you're very logical and math-oriented. Whatever it is, like, God has given us each gifts. And it can be really hard to figure out what those gifts are. It can also be really hard to figure out what they are when we're looking to our left and right to see what everybody around us is doing. Although each role that we might have, it has differences, but the importance of it and the callings of it are still the same. So here's my encouragement to you. Stop looking to your left and right to see how what you feel called to do measures up to the person next to you. I'm gonna say that one more time. Stop looking to your left and right to see what you feel called to do and how that measures up to the person next to you. It is so easy for us to be looking all around us and comparing our interests, our likes, our grades, our successes, our achievements, our whatever it may be. We compare so much, and it's such an easy thing to do. It's something that I do too. But we need to be like a racehorse. Let me explain. Racehorses. I don't know if you guys have ever watched horses race on TV or in person. It's not something that I like make a habit of doing, but there's this movie called Secretariat. And in Secretariat, there is this racehorse. And when it's running, obviously there's these blinders that are on its eyes. And what it does is it prevents the horse from being able to see what's directly next to it. And it keeps its eyes straight ahead and focused. We need to put on our spiritual, emotional, and physical blinders so that we stop looking all around us to see what everyone else is doing and comparing ourselves, and just run our race looking straight ahead at where the Lord is calling us. Put on your blinders and move boldly in whatever it is that the Lord is calling you to do. So what the heck is the Lord calling you to do? Girl, guy, I don't know. I really don't know. If I'm being completely honest, I have no idea what I want to do. I know what I'm majoring in. I'm majoring in like really broad things because I don't know what it is in life I want to do. I don't know exactly what the Lord is calling me to do. And if you know what the Lord is calling you to do, wow, that is amazing, and I'm so glad that you are there. And if you don't, that's okay too. The Lord will eventually show you in His timing. It's a difficult thing to try and figure out what it is that we're called to do. It's not easy. There's so many things that are going on around us. There's so many different people probably inputting what they think that you should be doing. And that's challenging. Some easy questions to ask yourself when you're trying to figure out what it might be that you feel called to do is, what do you enjoy? Because what you enjoy is definitely going to play a role into what you're called to do. If you're really into something, kind of lean into that, follow that, see how the Lord might be using that in your life. If you're really good at something, if you have a talent, lean into that and just take the pressure off. I don't care how old you are. You don't need to know what you have to do. Every now and then, I would get stressed out about the fact that I don't know what I want to do in life. And sometimes I'll be complaining to my dad about that, and I'll be like, I just don't know, and I'm freaking out about adding another major or a minor, or how could I graduate even quicker, or how could I do some master's program, or whatever it is. Like, how can I figure out what it is that I want to do? And I remember one time I was talking with him and I was like, I just don't know what I want to do next. And my dad goes, me neither. Y'all, my dad, he's literally 50. He has had a whole career and a half. He has done such amazing work for the kingdom of God and to stop human trafficking worldwide. And he says, I don't know what I want to do next either. I don't know what I'm doing with my life either. What it boils down to is, are you pleasing God with your life? Are you leaning into Him? Are you seeking Him? Are you searching for Him? And beyond that, it's okay if you don't know what's going on next. It's okay to walk blindly into a season just expecting the Lord to reveal Himself to you. I like to think about it like this. I'm kind of holding a lantern, and the lantern is only illuminating like one step in front of me. Lanterns don't light up an entire room. You can't see everything that's going on just from one little lantern. But if you hold up that lantern, you can see where your feet are, and you can see right in front of your feet. And you can take one more step, and then you can take one more step after that, and just little bits of light that are going to show you where you're going. In Psalms 119, it says, let the Lord be a lamp upon your feet and a light upon your path. Let Him light your way when you don't know what to do. It's totally okay to not know what you want to do. I don't know what I want to do. All right, so now let's talk about the joy that's in work, because we kind of just talked about the hard part and how it's like something that God does and is God ordained, and it's what His purpose was for us, that He gave us that work. It's not a result of the fall. But not only is it not a result of the fall, but it's actually really joyful. But there's a catch to that, right? It's not always joyful. It's joyful when you work hard for something, when you actually like put in all of your effort and you're proud of what you've done. Here's a good example of this. My little brother, he is 10. He is absolutely adorable. I love him with my entire heart. His name is Mount. Mount plays the piano. Mount is very good at the piano when he practices. And when he doesn't practice, you know, he doesn't learn his song. But what's really cool is that when Mount practices his piano and he gets into it and he gets excited about it and he diligently takes the time to master something, it is so much more joyful for him. And he gets all excited and he's like, yeah, can I show you my piece? Like, can I show you what I've been learning? And I'll come home from college and he wants to show me all of his new songs. But there was one week when my parents were out of town with him and he came back and he didn't want to go to his piano lesson. And the reason that he didn't want to go is because he hadn't been able to practice. He hadn't mastered it, so he didn't feel good about it in that moment because he hadn't had the time to work hard for it. When we work hard, it brings joy. When we don't work hard, we're not excited about it anymore. And something I find interesting is so often people don't want to put in the hard work. But guys, if you don't put in the hard work and the effort, how can you expect to reap the joy and the benefits? You really just can't. Ecclesiastes 5:18-20 says a little bit about this. It says, "Even so, I have noticed one thing, at least, that is good. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short life God has given them, and to accept their lot in life. It is a good thing to receive wealth from God and good health to enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your life, this is indeed a gift from God. God keeps people busy enjoying life that they may take no time to brood over the past." Guys, I really like this. I feel like it kind of just makes the Lord more personable. He wants us to eat and drink. Like, he wants us to have fun. He wants us to go to dinner parties and do fun things. And he wants us to enjoy our work under the sun. Under the sun is like, the sun is beating down on you and you're working hard, toiling in the fields. Like, that's the kind of the biblical perspective of this. That is really hard work. You end that day feeling so sore and so dead. But like, that is good. It is part of God's plan for us. In Proverbs 13:4, it says, "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied." It's unfulfilling work when we don't work hard. It says the sluggard, the person who's not working hard, they're craving more. Nothing is going to fulfill them. Nothing fulfills you when you're doing nothing. Hard work is good. Now I'm going to pull a quick little U-turn, and we're going to do a little side note on rest. And no, I know what you're thinking. Rest is not the opposite of work. There actually needs to be a balance between work and rest. On the seventh day, God actually rested. Isn't that cool? Okay, so we're going to talk about the Sabbath because that is what the seventh day of rest was for God. And as we do this, I'm going to be reading a couple different passages from The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which is a book by John Mark Comer. It is very good. It talks about restlessness, and restlessness kind of happens whenever we're working really hard or running really hard or occupied by all of these things and we don't take time to rest. It says, "And when our innate human restlessness collides with our digital age, the result is culture-wide crisis of emotional unhealth and spiritual death." Okay, guys, that sounds really bad. Emotional unhealth and spiritual death. But then it goes on to talk about the Sabbath and why this is so important. It says, "The word Sabbath comes to us from the Hebrew Shabbat. The word literally means to stop. The Sabbath simply means a day to stop working, to stop wanting, to stop worrying, to just stop. But Sabbath is more than just a day. It's a way of being in the world. It's a spirit of restfulness that comes from abiding, from living in the Father's loving presence all week long." The book then goes on to give this list of two different things, and I'm going to read out the list. The list of the restless and the restful. When you're restful, you have margin. There is a slowness, a quiet, deep relationships, time alone, delight, enjoyment, clarity, gratitude, contentment, trust, love, joy, peace, working from love, work as contribution. Whereas when we're restless and overworking ourselves, not resting, there's busyness, hurry, noise, isolation, crowds, distraction, envy, confusion, greed, discontentment, worry, anger, angst, melancholy, sadness, anxiety, working for love, work as an accumulation and an accomplishment. Which list best describes you? If you resonate more with the second list, there's no guilt trip. It's just the way it is sometimes. But I encourage you to live into the Sabbath, and it's a discipline. It's hard. The way the book describes the discipline, it says, There is a discipline to the Sabbath that is really hard for a lot of us. It takes a lot of intentionality. It won't just happen to you. It takes planning and preparation. It takes self-control, the capacity to say no to a list of good things so you can say yes to the best. But Sabbath is the primary discipline or practice by which we cultivate the spirit of restfulness in our lives as a whole. The Sabbath is to a spirit of restfulness what a soccer practice is to a match, or band practice to a show. It's how we practice. It's how we prepare our minds and bodies for the moments that matter most. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. This gift of rest is a gift. It is a gift from God that we can go away to a quiet place to be with Him and to rest up so that we can work more diligently, so that we can work hard, so that we can work for the Lord in a way that is glorifying to Him. Hopefully that has helped you in framing your mindset around work and school and the stress and the frustration that can come with it, to be able to look at it as a joy that you get to experience and to work hard in a joyful way that is honoring and glorifying to the Lord. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in to the On the Journey podcast. I have loved having you here today. Make sure you follow at onthejourney_podcast on Instagram and send this episode to somebody who you think needs to hear about it. Next week, we're going to be talking about qualification. I think so often we feel like I'm not qualified for fill in your blank. But the reality is you're qualified. So tune in next week to the On the Journey podcast to hear more about qualification. Peace out, friends, and remember to enjoy your journey.